This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The following is a GoPowerCat.com production.
I have lived in Kansas my entire life. So when I tell you what it's like to go out in the heat and mow the lawn, and the humidity, and then you give me a giant glass of cold lemonade, I think you probably know what I'm talking about. How refreshing. Yeah, that was Kansas State's victory on Saturday over BYU. And this is the Insiders.
Welcome to the K-State Insiders, your Kansas State sports show, presented by Synergy Financial Partners. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Oh, I didn't bring anyone else in. I meant to do this, but I got staring at my dog and I couldn't remember who we played. We're off to a rolling start. Oh, my goodness. Brian Hanley, Glenn Kinley, Tim Everson hopefully will join us. He's frantically working. The 1 p.m. shift did not work well for him. But K-State wins on Saturday over BYU. My brain wanted to say TCU, but I know that didn't happen. And they looked probably the best performance maybe of the season, guys. They led from wire to wire. They led for all but 90 seconds, less than that, of the game in which there was a tie. Brian, they came out and took care of business, and they needed to do that.
They did. You know, the one thing about it is I got back and forth into an argument with it seemed like a BYU fan, and, well, we missed a bunch of shots. And I said, and you did. You're right. You missed a bunch of shots. But when your offense is predicated on three-pointers, you're going to have off nights, you know, and a lot of that, you know, there were some open shots, but K-State, for the most part, contested a lot of shots and were out there, you know. So, you know, the missed shots are the missed shots. That's just what happens. But the one thing is, I thought K-State played, like you said, Fitz, probably their best game of the season. Definitely one of their best games, if not the best game. They came out. They defended well. It got a little shaky at the end, but, you know, it's not a K-State game if it doesn't get shaky at the end. Having said that, I just thought they played a physical game, which they needed to do. They defended. They made some timely plays. If they can get hot here and play like this the rest of the season, they got a shot. They just got a shot, Glenn.
Yeah, they do. I think that's a little bit funny. They said the missing shots. Like, yeah, that's kind of how basketball works, my friend, you know. Hey, you guys didn't beat us. We just didn't score quite as many points as we would have liked. So, but no, I think they play with a sense of urgency. Some of it is just shots going down, but some of it is – and I talked to Tyler Perry about an interview I had with him last week. He's been so good in the second half because he can't think and he just has to go out there and play. The season is at that point now where they can't think and they have to go out there and play, because if you spend too much time dwelling on what you should do or what you should have done differently or what you could have done in that first half, it's over. Your season's over. So in a way, this is the last five games are the one big second half, because this is do or die time now for Kansas State. I think they know that. I think they played in desperation mode, which they need. And I think this team has a belief. I don't know if they should. But this team has a belief that they can still find a way into that tournament, and they got three or four, I think, games on the schedule that look like winnable.
They sure do. That schedule includes tonight's game with West Virginia. It's a 6 p.m. game. It's on ESPN2. Then they go to Cincinnati on Saturday. And, fellas, winning those two, that's essential.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to lose – well, if you lose tonight, forget it, man. You can't make up that ground probably any other way than win the tournament in the postseason. But the importance of the Cincinnati game is it'll guarantee it'll keep them out, if they win both of them, of that first day. They'll get a bye, which will be valuable because, let's be honest, beating any of those teams in the bottom four isn't going to help them. It's going to add a game. And they just kind of get a cut to the chase and maybe earn one in the next round. But getting back to Tyler Perry, I just think it's really interesting that K-State, Brian, used him differently. Mm-hmm. They put the ball in Day-Day Ames' hands a little bit more to start this game. Yes. And they ran out of bounds plays for Tyler. The little dump off to Arthur, and Tyler just trails the ball right around him and uses the ball handler basically as a pick. And he's open for a three, and it turned into an and one. He was catching and shooting, which is what he did at North Texas. And why I don't think he's been that effective. He could never find his rhythm because he's always dribbling and shooting. And believe me, as a guy who loved to shoot the ball, I was a very good shooter. As I've said, not a great maker. I know the difference. Catching that ball in a rhythm and putting it up, Brian, as you know very well, you actually played basketball at a high level. That makes it a lot easier, particularly when you're already squared up to the basket. Everything has a rhythm and a feel to it. That's how you warm up. Someone feeds you the ball from underneath the basket. And I just think K-State's ignored that fact for too long, and they caught up to it on Saturday and put him in those situations. And lo and behold, he started making threes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's like, go back to what you're comfortable with doing. I think the experiment and constantly having him on the ball, I mean, sometimes things just don't work. As much as it was is good intentions and what we wanted to see happen, it just wasn't the best thing. And, you know, now we're in desperation mode, like Glenn said, it's all hands on deck. And this is the way that we can win games. And if this is the way, just go win it. Doesn't really matter how, just go win the game. So if putting him off the ball and getting him back into his comfort zone of being able to do that and being a lead scorer, but being off the ball, not having to worry about dribbling it up. And I know a lot of people think, hey, if a team's not pressing, how is that very difficult when you're initiating the offense? Well, it's a mindset, and that's right. The difference. It's just a mindset of initiating the offense versus being somebody that they're initiating the offense for. Huge difference, and we saw the dividends on Saturday.
Yeah, Glenn, Day-Day Ames is far from polished. In fact, at the end of the game, when BYU decided we got to press to try to make up ground here, he came out. He just couldn't keep him out there because he still gets rattled. But he does have the what I like to refer to as the creator gene. And he knows how to create for someone else. He had, I think, 4 assists in the game. He had a beautiful drive and dish back to Kaluma at the three-point lane. The dude has point guard instincts, and he does do that. I think they've got to have him on the floor a little bit more.
Yeah, I think he's got a ton of potential. I think he may have had a couple of those to Kaluma for three, because I was editing the highlights. I thought, is this the same play? No, it's just a very similar play, and he made a great pass both times and Kaluma knocked it down. I think he's got a ton of potential. He's not there yet. You want guard to be the guy where you say, give him the ball and everybody else breathes a sigh of relief. And we've talked about that K-State might not necessarily have that guy this year where he has the ball or he's in the game and everyone's like, okay, as long as we can get it inbounds to him, everything's going to be just fine. He's not there yet. But he has the potential, I think, and I think the only way he's going to get it is with the minutes. And I don't know that they have anybody who's completely there who can just leave you at ease. And so if they did, I'd say use that guy. But since they don't, why not use the freshman who's shown flashes and hope that those flashes show up more than the mistakes show up?
So I want to get into this because the Colonel's become a good friend of mine. Colonel McClain spoke with the team about his version of leadership as it applies to the military. And I just thought it was really interesting, some of the things he said to the team. When they go into theater, he tells his men to perform relentless violence. Jerome Tang kind of grabbed a hold of that. Not actual violence, but, you know, being in attack mode. And he said Arthur Kaluma performed relentless violence in this game. Guys, that was the most assertive Art's been this season. He had two opportunities in the game where he took the defense a rebound, turned around, put it on the floor, and took it to the other rim. Mm-hmm. Guys, if he continues to do things like that, K-State's going to be very tough here for down the stretch. And also, the entire premise is what they did a lot of last year, but without a true ball handler, they're less kind of eloquent at it. Mm-hmm. Go attack. Don't set up that offense where they struggle and get bogged down and shoot at the end of the shot. Go get to the rim and attack the rim. Glenn, they got to do that from here on out if they want to win.
It's exactly what they have to do, especially against BYU. I thought they really need to do it. That's what he did. He just got the ball and he just took off. And it was like, he's like, I'm either going to get fouled or I'm going to score at the rack. And maybe there's a chance that I lose it because I'm going so fast down the floor. But we turn it over 19 times a game anyway. So if I lose it, that's okay. Just take off. And there's, you know, 2/3 of the time, I guess you get a positive result if you get if you got a foul or a bucket or a turnover. And so they need more of that. Now, the challenge is, and I hate to be negative here, I don't think I'm being negative, but the challenge is now Arthur Kaluma is at the top of the scouting report for tonight against West Virginia. And K-State, I think, has had players play one really good game. And then when the next team is preparing solely for them, and right now that whiteboard says Kaluma real big on it in West Virginia's locker room, can he do it? Or if he can't, if they're so zeroed on him and they say, hey, if we don't stop this guy, he's going to score 35. If they're so zeroed on him, can Tyler Perry do it? Can Cam Carter do it? Because the benefit of having the balanced attack is that you have three guys who can do it. But after one guy balls out like that, you know the other team's going to be locked in on him. So I would say one of those other guys needs to step up tonight. Or you could say, hey, this turnaround is so quick that maybe they haven't had time to completely zero Arthur. Not that he wasn't already on the scouting report, but West Virginia might be like, yeah, he was good on Saturday. We can't game plan around him because we just played 40 hours ago.
Yeah.
Should I break into that locker room and change the name to Finister?
you can if you want.
Just I just think, I mean, you're right, Glenn. And the person, I think it's Cam Carter. I think he's got to get back into the mode. I'm not saying he played horrible or anything against BYU, but he's capable of playing better. Mm-hmm. And he's capable of playing better than what he has the last few weeks. So we got to get him back into that mode. And if he does, then that's when K-State is really, really scary because you have Perry, Kaluma, and mm-hmm. Carter, all guys. And again, for the most part, I'm not saying guys have played bad, but if we can get them playing at just another level up, if we mm-hmm. can do that, K-State becomes a problem. They really, really do. I know that a lot of fans think that the season, oh, it's bleak. And I'm like, it's not yet. Don't get me wrong, the room for or the margin for error is paper thin. I mean, it just is. But having said that, on the other side of that, it's right there for them. It literally mm-hmm. is right there for them. So if we can just get those guys to put it all together here for the next couple of weeks, things are going to change for K-State. I promise they will. So it's just a matter of can we get them all playing at the right time or playing well at the right time, which is right now.
And I think that we talked about with football season, how close K-State was to finishing with 10 or 11 wins. If you look at the field goal at Mizzou and the overtime against Texas and just these games where you felt like they should have won, and K-State's had those in basketball. I mean, I'm looking at, I think before this past weekend, their last four losses, I want to say two of them were by 6 points and two of them were by 3 points. And even you figure the 6-point games were fouls. And so those are basically 4-1 possession games that could have that much easily gone the other way. If they win one or two of those, the season has a different outlook like right now. So I'm not ready to write off this team as just a bad team that's NIT bound. And it, you know, they just couldn't do it without Naquan and Quez and they're just no good. I think this isn't a bad team. Now, the committee doesn't care necessarily. Well, hey, they were in it for a while. With 8 minutes left, it was tied, guys. So they probably deserve a bid. Right. They hung in there. They played. Hey, guys, gave a great effort in Austin. All right, so we got to put them in. That doesn't matter. And so although I do think it tells you that this team can compete and that's great, you got to go out and win them if you want a shot. And I think they're set up in a spot where it's possible. I think at this point it might take a win or two in the Big 12 tournament, depending on how these last four go. But it starts with, we said it, but they can't lose tonight. This is cannot lose.
No.
Can't lose. Can't. Got to go to Cincinnati and get a win.
Yes.
Or be prepared to win in Allen Fieldhouse. I'll let them pick.
yeah. I've said it before. That's not a good strategy. Yeah. Bill Self has as many losses in Allen Fieldhouse as he has Big 12 titles. So
that's crazy.
I wouldn't bet on it.
They just destroy Texas without Kevin McCullough. Yeah. Just amazing. Yeah. And then you got to beat Iowa State to close out the season at home. So there's a lot of challenges ahead, but it starts with, I don't like to say it this way, but your easiest test is tonight. I mean, West Virginia is down there at the bottom of the conference.
Yeah.
They've struggled. They know Josh Eilert, a good K-Stater, probably. Well, he won't be back as coach. He was just interim, but the season isn't going to get him over that hump. I don't know how this team kind of maintains it through their last five or six games. And if you're K-State, you kind of hope they let up off the gas today, because this is a capable team. Mm. They've won some places, and they beat some people in West Virginia. It's been kind of impressive, but I think they'll get it done. It's just, for me, the thing about the BYU game, Brian, wasn't that they won. It's how they won. Mm-hmm. They didn't just kind of eke out a late, maybe an overtime win in which Tyler Perry bails them out again. They put their foot on someone's throat, and they stood there for 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's the difference. We haven't seen that a lot of times. I mean, even some of these non-conference games, I mean, you're just like, why are we going to overtime with some of these teams? Like, what is going on? And then you see this, which is why I think a lot of fans are really frustrated, because they understand how good this team can be when they do exactly what you said, Fitz, when they put their foot on somebody's throat and just suck the life out of them. I mean, it just is what it is. So it's frustrating. But at the same time, that's what makes it so exciting. It's college basketball. That's what makes it exciting. Look, don't get me wrong. None of us want to be sitting here biting our nails to see if they get into the tournament. We want that to have been all over with weeks ago. I get that part of it. But at the same time, I mean, that's kind of what college basketball has become. You know, with all the one and done type of stuff, Glenn, the parity is just crazy, especially in this conference. And I love it, and I think that's the part that K-State fans, that makes them so nervous, is because you see a game like BYU, and BYU's a good basketball team. They really are. And K-State just smacked them around. Mm. They just literally smacked them around, said, no, not today. We're going to win, and no matter what you do, you're not going to win this game. Matter of fact, it's not really going to be that close. And that was the thing. 10 points here or there, but it really wasn't – I mean, it wasn't that close.
Yeah, it's like playing in the best conference in America is all fun and games until you have to play in the best conference in America.
There you go.
It sounds good to say, and you hear the ESPN commentators say the Big 12 is just loaded this year, and you're like, yeah, it is. And then you get into it, and you're like, this stinks, man. This is brutal. And so, yeah, it's their slate has been brutal, but I think that they've battled through a lot this year. And, hey, if you want to look on the flip side, Jerome Tang actually mentioned it, was able to laugh about it in the press conference last week. He goes, because I was talking about all the games they could have won, right? I mean, they've lost a few close ones. He goes, hey, imagine if we had lost those six overtime games. I mean, imagine how those are one possession games, or at least they were when it went to overtime. And imagine how different the season looks if you drop those. So the margin for error is just minimal or non-existent in the Big 12. And this team, I think, is a good team, but not a good enough team that they can play lousy and win very often, if at all. And so that's where they're different than a team like Kansas, maybe, who can be without a McCullough and who can miss some shots but still find a way to win. This team has to put the pieces together to win basketball games. And that's not a knock. Most teams in this league is so good that most teams can't play a 4 out of 10 on their potential and win the game. Most teams is going to have to be a 7 or an 8 or 9.
Well, I think that's kind of the difference too, Glenn, is what you mentioned is a lot of basketball fans confuse missing shots with playing bad. Those are two totally different things. And in case they can miss shots and still win, we've seen it in those overtime games, and against some of those lower tier opponents, they've missed shots, but they were still able to win. When they played bad, Houston, That's playing bad.
Yeah.
You know, and there's the difference. Those are the difference between the two. But on the flip side of that, again, missing shots, look at Baylor. K-State couldn't make anything, but then they locked down the second half against Baylor, and they locked them down where they couldn't make anything, and they won. Well, if anybody watched the Baylor-Houston game on Saturday, that was one of the best basketball games of the season. Mm-hmm. And K-State was able to go, and I mean, it was at home, but they beat Baylor. You know, so the margin is super thin, and it's just a matter of do you play well? And more than that, guys, will you play tough? Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, it's if you play well or if you play bad, okay. But overcome some of that with some toughness. And I think sometimes the guys get a little defeated because they let their offense affect their defense, which every basketball coach always tells you you can't do. But they're still kids. It is what it is. But if they come out and they just play tough, I think K-State's in every basketball game that they're in.
Yeah. Boy, would I love to see K-State win this next two, because let me tell you this. That matchup with Iowa State to close out the season in Bramlage already has enough drama attached to it.
Yeah,
and you want to add in the fact that that might be must-win tournament talk for K-State, your first four out. If you win this, your last four in type of deal. Man, give me all the storylines for that game. That's gonna be must-see right there.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? And the great thing is they win these next two. They beat Iowa State. They sneak into the field. Then someone gets to go to Dayton. And I know when you're talking spring break, you think Dayton.
There you go.
I'm so opposed to this being more than 64 teams, but I do agree that if they want to have this, all automatic qualifiers should be in the field of 64. Dayton should be reserved for the at-large bids. Like Kansas State, if they can sneak in at the very end, we will see. It starts tonight at Bramlage Coliseum, 6 p.m. But there's other K-State storylines out there that need to be discussed, including football and women's basketball. Do we have to bring it up, what happened Sunday in Allen Fieldhouse? And the baseball team is off and rocking. This is The Insiders, your K-State sports show, and we'll be right back.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the mission is to change the way Americans plan for their financial future. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
Welcome back to The Insiders, Tim Fitzgerald and Brian Hanley and Glenn Kenley. Tim Everson is still being held for ransom, and we've decided not to pay it. It was a candy bar, and I'm not giving up a candy bar.
I can't afford one.
No. Hopefully he'll hop on here towards the end of the show. Guys, the women rolled into Allen Fieldhouse with a high ranking and high expectations and laid an egg. I did not get to watch most of this game. I saw the ending, how close they came to putting it in overtime. Mm-hmm. This is a game, if you want to be a top 10 team, you just don't lose it. But credit KU, from mm-hmm. all accounts, KU won the game. Mm-hmm. They went out and earned this victory. I did not see that coming, because this is only the third loss for the K-State women this season with Ioka Lee on the floor. Glenn, does this hurt them?
Yeah, it does. I mean, as you look at it, certainly hurts them in the Big 12 title race, if not knocks them out of it. And then as you look at tournament hosting, and that's kind of what they've been trying to plead, it makes their future games, these last few, become more important. You would have loved to have two games left and say, hey, we kind of already got a tournament host spot locked up. I don't think they're going to be in that spot. That's not to say that they're not still in contention to host, but the thing I'll say, just from a moving forward perspective, again, this doesn't matter for hosting or for the committee, because the committee doesn't look into all this, but I'll just say, from covering both teams, KU, I think KU is a really good team. One that they won the WNIT last year and brought back basically all their key pieces, and then added in a five-star freshman in Samaya Nichols, who was the leading scorer in Sunday's game. She's really good, and I think this is actually a good KU team. Now they don't their resume, their record doesn't look good because they had a really slow start, but I think they've won five of their last six now. They're playing well at just the right time, which is actually exactly what they did last year, except for last year they kind of kicked it into gear a little bit too late, because then they ended up going on the WNIT run. So the stars were aligned, I think, for KU to win this game. What I mean by that is that they were kind of in the spot K-State's in. They were desperate for a win, and they needed a win in that spot more than K-State needed a win. And on top of that, I think there's something to be said about – I think these teams had similar expectations coming into the season. In fact, KU may have been ranked in the preseason poll. I'm not sure if K-State was. People thought these teams are both going to be really good. And then you get 10 weeks into the season, and K-State's ranked number two in the country, and KU isn't ranked and is on the outside looking in from the tournament. And I think that gets to you. So I think that this team in Lawrence was like, you know what? You know, let's go back to September. We were the same – thought to be the same team or a same highly touted team as them. So there was something to be said for, hey, this team down the road, people have been talking about them for the last 4 months – and it's about time we get some respect. So I think that was a huge win for KU. I don't think it was a blow for K-State that it's, you know, has any crazy effects, but it makes the next one more important.
Right. Brian, as a former player, you know, coaches say this is the time of year when you want to be playing your best basketball. Right. Because of the Lee injury, K-State isn't.
No.
Can they get that back on track between now and the end of the Big 12 tournament?
I mean, I think they can. I mean, it's really going to depend on these next couple of games. I know a lot of people say get back to practice and go back and dig in, which I think it's more at this time of the year, teams aren't practicing 2 hours anyway. They're not doing that. You know, it's more film study. And I think that's what they kind of have to get back into is, and I know Coach will do that, is to get the women in there and figure out what's not working, or more importantly, what is working, and let's continue to do that.
Yeah.
I go, so, I think they will. But then they definitely have time, Fitz, to be able to get back and get it figured out. Like I said, basketball, the great thing about basketball is a lot of times you have two games a week. So you can figure some stuff out pretty quickly. Even if it's just, okay, you got a week off or whatever, most of the time it's two games. You can figure some stuff out. Football is a lot of different. You know, plus there's a lot more people playing. So
yeah,
but in basketball, you can change things pretty quickly. I just think they got to get back to being more aggressive, maybe getting up and down the court a little bit more. 55 points, not enough. I know Ioka Lee had a bad shooting night, which that led to a lot of this stuff. But I think KU had a lot to do with that number.
Yeah, one. Their center is really good.
Yeah, you got to give them credit. So more than just saying K-State played a bad game.
Right.
Do I think K-State's a better team? Yes, but they didn't play well. And when you don't play well in a good conference on the road, you lose. That's just kind of what happens. So they can for sure get this back.
I'll say this, guys. I think it's good for women's basketball and good for even women's basketball in Kansas that we're having a conversation like this. And that, I think it says a lot about what K-State women have done for the sport in this region, in this area, because – and I don't just mean that we're talking about them, although that's exciting too, because we wouldn't be if they had 25 losses. But I'll tell you this. I think that I'm probably guilty of it too, but I think a lot of people, I don't want to say baby them, but treat them as, you know, when the women lose, it's like, well, they were without Ioka Lee and they're going to get it figured out. You know, good job. Try again next week. And when the men lose, it's like, what the hell's the matter with Tyler Perry? And so I think the women actually deserve the respect of having these high expectations and of I think there was people mad on Twitter about some coaching decisions Jeff Mitty made or something like that. And I'm like, although that stuff can be frustrating and that, you know, criticism can be actually kind of annoying, but it's a good sign in a way that people care enough and that the expectation and that the investment fits has gotten so high for this game and for this team that a year or two or three ago, people wouldn't have – they wouldn't have been mad online after this game because they wouldn't have watched this game. So this team has gotten people excited about women's basketball in Kansas, and it's cool.
Indeed. Baseball is underway. They got going down Arizona. They came home for a weekend series with Holy Cross. They took 2 out of 3. They caught the break of pretty decent weather. A little chilly on Friday, but mostly really good weather for late to mid-February. I don't really want to get into the baseball team specifically right now, but I want to throw this out. Brian and Glenn, should they move college baseball season back? I'm a big fan of it, but they all complain. Well, we got our wood bat leagues in the summer. We got these leagues, and we got to go do these things. I'm like, no. College baseball should be ending with the World Series in and around the 4th of July up in Omaha. And northern teams shouldn't be at the disadvantage of having to play baseball games in February. They were playing games before Major League Baseball played their first spring games.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
I just think you have to move it back. Look, I know what they're trying to do is that you're trying to keep as much of a season within the school year as possible.
Right.
I get that part of it, but baseball is not an in-season sport or an in-school sport. It's just not. Think about growing up as a kid when you played baseball. It was in the summer. You weren't going to school during those times for most of those games. You just weren't. I go, so baseball is that. And to try to get it and to cram it all in, it's just like you said, Fitz, it doesn't make sense. You know, they're worried about other leagues and we got to let them go out there and play in these other leagues. And I get the exposure and what you're trying to do, but you know what? Do what's best for the sport. And I think the sport would have more engagement if it was played in better weather and not having, I don't know, 10 to 15 games out there. People are out there shivering because people just won't go. That's you'll get 10 fans or 15, 20 fans out there. They're not going out there to sit in 10 degree weather. They're just not going to go do that. But you push it back a month and a half, then you don't have those kinds of issues. I just think it's something that could be done. But, you know, we know who the powers that be that won't do it. So it
SEC.
Is.
This is unrelated. I wish K-State had softball so bad. I think softball's so much fun. I think it's faster paced than baseball.
It is.
And there's a lot more small ball action. The ball's in play a lot more. Yep. There's more, you know, I think softball's awesome. And I wish K-State had it. That was completely out of left field.
You're right.
See what I did there, though? Out of left field.
Yeah. But it is exciting. It's super exciting. Look, I live here in Texas, and they take softball serious down here. Mm-hmm. And you know, it is fast paced. You'll get every game. It's not like football. Let's not kid ourselves as far as crowds are concerned. But they will have a ton of people on a Tuesday night girls softball game for a girls high school softball game. So it'll be a ton of people. You could do the same thing as far as women's softball in college. Because, again, on a Tuesday night, you go to – and look, OU is an anomaly because they're so good.
It's crazy.
But you can't tell me that you can't do that at other places and get them excited about it. You absolutely can. You absolutely should. It's bad. Don't get me wrong. I wish they had it, but you can't have everything. I understand money is, you know, you can only string it so far. So I get that. But you're right, Glenn. I wish K-State had it.
I wish they had softball and wrestling, but that's a different topic. And we could go a long time on that. But if you don't know my master plan, I think basketball shouldn't start till January 1, and we should have May Madness, and baseball starts up in late March or something, and you have July 4th College World Series, and football has the fall. I think it's a way to roll, but
what if, you know, I'm a big college football guy. What if college football, we just go like maybe 20 weeks? What if we just start college football in mid-August and then end it about the same time? I think that seems like a good, feasible plan that wouldn't have any repercussions at all.
Well,
I don't disagree.
I kind of wish I kind of wish they'd let them start a little bit earlier, so that there'd be 2 or 3 seasons. Look, guys, they're going to go to a 4-game playoff on top of a 12-game season with a championship game.
Yeah.
You're now playing close to an NFL regular season schedule. And I'm not sure that's fair to the athletes with so few weeks off. I mean, these aren't professionals. They got to go to school. They got to do everything else. I think they need some more rehab time built into the schedule. And let's talk about football real quick. I have been screaming from the mountaintop for a while that K-State needs to hire a coach to be in charge of the transfer portal. K-State kind of did that with naming Clint Brown the director of roster management, and that includes the roster and recruiting and the transfer portal, and just another layer in there to help Chris Klieman manage the roster, because I mean,
yeah,
I know it was just a nightmare this December trying to recruit, keep your own players out of the transfer portal, get guys from the transfer portal. You know, aside from the fact the NCAA is now kind of considering maybe moving the signing day up a little bit and maybe restoring or having a preseason signing period, so they have three. Aside from that, just getting any help for K-State is crucial, because the transfer portal, they're not doing it right. And hopefully Coach Brown can do that for him. He was the offensive quality control analyst for the last 2 years. He's a defensive coach by trade. Brian, I love it. They needed this desperately.
Yeah, they did. I know we've talked about it several times, and absolutely they had to have somebody in charge of this. Look, we can be just bitch and moan about the transfer portal and NIL, whatever we want to. We can do that forever, but it's here. And if it's going to be here and we're going to compete, then we need to compete right along with it and get people in place so we can take advantage the same way that other people take advantage of it. We got to work the system, and I am so glad that they decided to take this step. I think they could have taken a step further, but that's just me being greedy. Taking one step at least now, great. I mean, it's only going to help. Look, it's you got to be able to compete. You got to be able to do those things. And look at NFL rosters. They have the same type of thing out there. It's just player development.
Right.
You know, and that's all that it is. You got to go find and look at guys. Look, and here's the thing. I know a lot of people think that, oh, okay, it's not that big of a job. This is a huge job that he has. I mean, this is a gigantic job. This is not just some throwaway job that maybe he hired a buddy to do or something like that. This is a gigantic job that he has been tasked with. So basically you're looking at all of these football players all over the country making contacts on who possibly could get into a transfer portal, who you think could get into a transfer portal. And then once they do get into the transfer portal, then having to decipher through that, this is just a big job, man. It really is.
Yeah, Brian, there's a million moving parts to this. I look at it. I have a hard time figuring out how many years of eligibility guys have. Yeah. Right? I mean, you're talking about recruiting, but I'm talking about, does this guy have a redshirt year or a COVID year or both? And then he got a hardship redshirt, but he got a medical redshirt, but you can't use two of them. But he was here for COVID, but he was an early enrollee. It's chaos.
Yeah.
And so there's so many different things that this guy could do with this job, whether that's figuring out who has another year or two or three, figuring out who's going to use those years and who's not. You're talking about recruiting multiple high school classes. You're talking about recruiting the transfer portal. So there's a million things that go into it. And I think that at the end of the day, and you guys both know this, but when you're in a spot of leadership like Chris Klieman is, when new things come up and present themselves, guess who gets to take care of it? Guess who has the honor and privilege of picking up any of the responsibility that doesn't fall under anybody else's job title, right? It's you. Mm-hmm. And so I think Chris Klieman probably said, wait a minute. I need to get 2.5 hours of sleep a night instead of two, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure that guy has a million and one job responsibilities. And this is one thing that can be taken off his plate, even if that doesn't make the plate light at all.
Okay, the courts out in, I think it was Tennessee, ruled the NCAA can't put up any guardrails for the NIL. It's a free-for-all. Look, I understand what the court ruled, but it's the equivalent of the court coming out and saying, hey, you know what? You really can't limit someone's speed. That's infringing on their ability to get where they need to be. We're going to not have speed limits starting right now. Yeah. You know, it's like the NCAA complained this disrupts how we've been doing things. Well, duh, you've been doing things wrong.
Yeah.
But still, it's a jarring, just a confession. And now every team's like, okay, we can steal each other's players. Mm-hmm. There's no rules. The NCAA can't touch us. Guys, the NCAA needs to sit its members down and say, You guys figure out how to fix it. You guys quit looking at us. You guys, every time we do pass something, someone goes to court and gets it shot down. So the members have got to either fix it or end the NCAA because this is untenable. This can't stand in place this way, or we're talking professional sports straight on. We're not even talking semi-pro. Yeah. It's a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's at some point it's gotta be exactly what you said, Fitz. I mean, and now granted, I know it was just an injunction, but you know how injunctions go. If it was in Tennessee, it'll be in North Carolina. It'll be in Iowa. It'll be in California and Texas all before you know it. So it's going to happen. It's just somebody has to eventually say something and get this done. Because the one thing that I'm really afraid of, I mean, you're going to get some people that are going to stay no matter what because they haven't made as much money as they possibly could. But you're going to find so many really good football coaches that just say, I'm not doing this anymore. Right. I did college football. I love it. But this is not it for me. I will go and be. And we've already seen it. Guys going to be assistants. I mean, think of a guy like Chip Kelly, who I think Chip Kelly, if anybody hasn't heard, you should YouTube Chip Kelly on what he said could be done with this whole transfer portal NIL. He is right on the money. He said, I've had enough. I would rather go be an offensive coordinator somewhere. Now, there's some circumstances. I think UCLA was trying to fire him, and he got wind, and then he said, I'm out of here. But he's a guy that was a head coach in the NFL, comes back to college, and then says, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. This is not coaching football. I don't want to be the head guy responsible for this anymore. And you're going to start seeing so many of these coaches do the same thing. It's just, you know what, I made a bunch of money. I'll go be an assistant. I'll go be in a coordinator somewhere. I'll go to the NFL and just be done with this college thing. And it'll be too bad because then you will really start to see bad coaching in college football. We already see a lot of that already, but you'll start seeing it get really bad when you're having to hire guys that are not qualified to do the jobs that they're asked to do. And then the quality of football will start to go down. Then what?
Yeah. And there's, especially in football specifically, they're still making enough money in the NFL that the quality could go up if players are making so much from NIL that you have like a stud who would be a first round draft pick who's going to play 4 years of college football because he's making that much NIL money. But guys, this is something Chris Kleiman's touched on before. He said it in a press conference, I think towards the end of the year. He goes, his favorite time of the day is when he gets out on the practice field with his guys and he gets to have a whistle and he gets to throw his hat on and he gets to run around with the guys on the field and coach football, right? Like that's why he does this. He doesn't do this because he loves fundraising, right?
Right.
And I don't mean to alarm anybody, but I'm not saying Chris Kleiman's going to go to the NFL or anything like that, but I do think that he's not the only coach that feels that way. They love coaching football. And there's so many other things that they have to do now. And I think the solution is some guys are going to leave. I think this is, in a way, K-State has found, I don't want to call it a solution, but a way to deal with it in hiring somebody to do some of those things so that Chris Kleiman can coach football.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to wonder what the NIL budgets for SEC football rosters will be.
Oh, it has to be nuts.
I mean, let's be blunt here. If it's like $5 million a year, which might be on the low end, is that sustainable? Are the donors going to keep doing that over and over?
Yeah.
Look, a lot of these people that can donate this kind of money did it because they're good with money.
Yeah.
And if they're going to donate a bunch of money to the school, they have a jumbotron with their name on it. They have a building with their name on it. Now it's just kind of anonymous NIL money that goes into a fund. You know, we all thought this was all going to be advertising, and it's not. Now it's just boosters buying players.
Maybe it could be Arch Manning brought to you by, and then get a company name on there. But it's chaos. And I think Scott Van Pelt did a thing on it on SportsCenter. He talked about just what happens when the donor gives this much, and then next year you say, okay, that you gave that much last year. Now we need you to give two times that this year. And then they say, wait a minute, the guy that I gave you all that money for last year, he only ended up playing in four games, and right. and he wasn't any good. And then he transferred to a new school, but I gave him $2 million and he didn't do anything for my school. When donors give money to the athletic department, if they give money for the new practice facility, the practice facility is getting built, or else right. somebody's going to have some issues.
Right.
When they give money to NIL, there's no guarantee. I'll give you this much, but he better hit 19 three-pointers in non-conference play. There's no guarantee, and so that's when you're going to have donors who are unhappy, and that's how coaches are going to get run out of town, because coaches are going to say, I gave this much money, and this coach picked the wrong guy to spend my money on, and then you got even more drama.
I hadn't thought about that. A donor who's invested a lot of money in a player, and that player's not seeing the field, yeah, they'll call. They'll call someone.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys probably have a little bit more swing than you'd think.
What a mess. All of this brought on by the NCAA not being proactive and being entrenched in this is the way we've always done it. That's never the right answer in any situation. Just because you've done it wrong forever doesn't mean it's the right way. It's still wrong. And that's basically what the NCAA has been saying. Well, this is the way we do it. It's worked. Well, it hasn't worked for everyone.
No,
but also, Brian, you come back to this. You mentioned these NIL agreements. There needs to be something standardized about them, yep. and that the players, you know, have to have some loyalty to the institution, so they can't get $1 million and then hit the transfer portal. And I think when they sign a contract, this contract, like any other contract, needs to be them agreeing to some boundaries about NIL and those things. I get what the courts are doing here. They're saying, yeah, the membership voted on this, but the players didn't. So if it's really going to be now an employee-employer relationship, it's now going to be a contractual relationship with money exchanging hands, put everything in those contracts. Make it standard that all NCAA institutions have to have certain clauses in every contract. And if not, then the school's responsible. The NIL collective decides, well, we're going to leave that out. The school's responsible. I don't know how else they're going to get this under control in any way other than making the players agree to the barriers. Mm-hmm. If we're going to pay you $1 million, here's some boundaries.
Absolutely. I mean, we brought it up on the Big 12 Insiders on Friday, is contracts.
Yep.
You got to sign a contract, and you got to start making people accountable. There's in those contracts, you got to put it in there. You got to be at this school for this amount of time to get this amount of money. Period. End of story. And if you do decide to leave, then you have to get bought out, just because that's the pushback is it will coaches get to leave whenever they want to leave, but coaches just don't get the, okay, I'm cutting up my contract and I'm walking out the door. There's buyout clauses in those contracts. Mm-hmm. And if you want to start doing that, then make that be part of a player's buyout too. If you want to go to four different schools in four different years, fine. But you know what? You got a contract, and it's got to get bought out. And if that other school doesn't decide to do it, guess what? You're on the hook for that money. I go, and it's just that simple. That seems like a crazy way to think about college athletics, but aren't we in a crazy situation now with college athletics? Yeah. So, you know, I don't like to go to extremes with stuff like that, because I'm just not an extreme type of guy, but this is where we are. And I think if we don't start having that kind of thinking, it's already a mess. It'll just get worse. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, schools have to have some sort of control. Right. That would be number one. I get players. And look, I am all pro player. You're never going to say that I don't think players should get paid. I'll never say that, because I believe they should. But at some point, there's still got to be rules. There's rules for everything. I go, because if you're not going to have any rules, then what's the point to all of this anyway? If it's just everybody's going to cheat, whoever has the most money is always going to win. They'll get the best players. I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
So there's got to be some sort of rules, doesn't there, Glenn?
And the crazy thing right now is I don't even think people know if they're cheating or not. There's no rules. So like these teams are like, let's just do this. We can do that. Can we do that? I feel like we can do that. And so it's crazy. Going back to Kansas State a little bit, I think the benefit or the good side for, I think about Wildcat football, and I'm sure Jerome Tang's the same way, these guys are very, very relational with their players. And mm-hmm. these guys have talked before. Chris Kleiman's talked about it on this topic, that building relationship with your guys and loving your guys and making sure that they are taken care of and that they know that they're valued and that you have a relationship with them, that they're not just a body in your locker room. That stuff matters. And I'll tell you right now, there's going to be a lot of schools who have been relying on various different factors besides that to get players. And those factors are not going to work anymore because Tennessee or LSU or whoever can give them more money. And so if you were relying on NIL, unless you're one of the few programs who can say, yeah, we'll give you more than anybody else. If you were relying on NIL to get players, those programs are getting the players you wanted. K-State's been getting guys for the right reasons. I think they'll continue to get guys for the right reasons. Because you can't tell me that a guy like Austin Moore couldn't have found somewhere out there that they could have provided him with more NIL than he's getting in Manhattan, Kansas. And I'm sure he's getting some. I'm not saying he's not. But K-State's got guys who are not there for the money. That being said, that doesn't mean they don't need the money. That doesn't mean that everybody's got a number. I'm a believer in that. A guy could say, I'm loyal to this place. I'm not going anywhere. I love it here. Everybody's got a number. If an SEC school comes and says, we'll give you $1 million, it's like, I just said I'm loyal to K-State. What are you talking about? Are you not hearing me? We'll give you $5 million. I'm loyal to K-State. We'll give you $35 million. When do I sign?
Yeah.
Everybody's got a number, man. So the NIL stuff is important whether we like it or not.
Yep. I'm the same way. You offer me $35 million.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've got one big question to wrap this up with, but we're going to do it after this break. It's sort of K-State sports. I know some of you don't like me talking about former players, but three words are being spoken now in some college football circles, and I want to get the panel's thoughts on Will Howard and Heisman.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the vision is to build the world's largest consumer financial education and empowerment company. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
You're watching the K-State Insiders, sponsored by our good friends at Synergy Financial Partners. They also sponsor the Big 12 Insiders Tuesday through Friday right here on this channel, same time, 1 p.m. Central. Brian runs that ship and does a great job, having a lot of fun with that show. Make sure, if you're a follower of Go PowerCat, a follower of this channel, and you're on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it, Elon's toy, whatever you want to call it, make sure you're following at Big 12 Insiders. It's our new Twitter for the Big 12 Insiders to communicate what's going on from there. I think, but make sure you're subscribed to this, hit the thumbs up on this video. The people forget to do that on lives, because they're kind of just watching us and they know we're live. And so they're kind of a little bit, they don't pause and do things, but, please take care of that stuff for us. And there goes Glenn. Glenn's back. Will Howard has transferred to Ohio State. We all know that. And I knew he would be in a position to possibly be considered for the Heisman Trophy simply because he will have great players around him. He will have a better all-around offense around him in terms of skill guys. He's got NFL guys behind him and throwing it to him. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But I never expected Will Howard to be listed among people who know their stuff, including Josh Pate right here on 24/7 Sports, who is outstanding, saying he will not be surprised if Will Howard is a Heisman finalist in New York and he could win. Brian, is this tangible? Is Will Howard going to be on that Heisman list?
I mean, here's the first thing. if he's the starter. And I know everybody just kind of goes into this, oh, well, he transferred. Of course he's going to be the starter. You may want to go look at who Ohio State is bringing in as quarterbacks to be in that offense. And then go say, is Will better than those guys? Because there's some five-star guys that are coming in there that, and they're already there that are really, really good. Having said that, if Will's the starter in a Chip Kelly offense, yeah. At Ohio State, absolutely his name is going to be in the Heisman conversation. Now, whether he wins it or not, I don't know. But yes, if he's the starter, then he's going to have every opportunity to be in the Heisman race. Now, the thing that I think is funny, and I know a lot of K-State fans are going to think it's funny, is that it seems like a lot of people haven't really done all their homework about Will because everybody's talking about how much of a running threat that he is. And while Will did run for some yards, I'm not going to confuse him with Avery Johnson, L. Roberson, Michael Bishop. You're not going to confuse him for those guys. So I'm not going to just go out there and say, oh, he's going to run the ball. I mean, they act like he's going to run for 900 yards. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. No, that's not what's going to happen here. No. I go, but to answer the question again, yes, he will be. If he's the starter, he will absolutely be in the race. He'll be in the hunt. And if he plays well, yeah, he could very well end up in New York.
Glenn, is it fair that he could put up the same numbers as K-State's quarterback and maybe even have a great season, you know, an 11-1, 10-2 if he'd been here next season, and do all the same things in Columbus, Ohio, but now he's a candidate for the Heisman? It's one of those things that kind of irks me. It's not just now about how good you are. It's sometimes about where you're doing it. And of course, how many games have you won? And that was kind of defeated this year with the LSU quarterback winning. But yeah, I think it kind of sucks that he was never mentioned about that at Kansas State, but now he's at Ohio State and he is.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right. LSU, I guess, would dispel that rumor, but I think usually it is it relates very closely to your win total. And it's just going to be, hey, let's take the best four of the five finalists or whatever are going to be from the four best teams or whatever it is. So I think a lot of it just depends on how good Ohio State is. And if Ohio State's defense ends up being awful and they only win 8 games, he's not a Heisman finalist, no matter what numbers he puts up. And even if he's really good on offense, but their defense is letting it down. So I think the award can be tricky in that way. I have a hard time believing that his ceiling magically becomes that much higher in a new system. Yeah, he's going to have better like playmakers around him. He's going to have some really, really talented skill players around him, and I'm sure they're going to be good. But I think we just saw times where I felt like even this past season, we saw times where we said, I felt like we knew what we were getting out of Will Howard. And that's not – people are going to take that as a not. It's not, because what we were getting out of Will Howard was pretty dang good, right? But there was I didn't feel like as much after 3 years there was any idea of what could have been. It was a lot of this is who he is, and he's good. He's really good. There's a reason Ohio State wanted him. He's a really good quarterback, but I don't get the idea that, yeah, he's really good, and we've only seen 50% of his potential. No, I think we've seen most of where it is now, and now the question is, do they utilize him better, or is it that much of a difference? And maybe it is to have 5 stars at receiver and running back.
I mean, I think it is definitely a difference, Glenn. I for sure think it's a difference when you have playmakers around that are that skilled. I mean, you just think Ohio State is just churning out wide receivers, first round wide receivers that are not just first round, that are being very productive in the National Football League as soon as they get there. I mean, they are just churning those out. So if that continues, I mean, look, we love K-State. We love our receivers, but they're not in the same class. So if that's what he's going to be exposed to and have at his disposal, then you're going to see better play out of him. I mean, because you know Ohio State's going to put out a really good offensive line, like the offensive line that K-State had was really good this year. Ohio State does that every year. I go, again, they have one or two guys that get drafted in the first round every single season. So, and again, it's not because those guys are are average. They go to the NFL too and are playing well right away. So, but at the same time, here's something to think about. And I know people are going to take this the wrong way, but you know me, I'm going to say it anyway. Will Howard is not at K-State because they believe that Avery Johnson gave him a better chance to win. Yeah. Period. End of story. That is the reason that he is not at Kansas State any longer. That's right. Not a knock on Will or how good he is. We think, and I can say we, the coaches think they have a better chance to win with Avery, period. And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. I mean, that's what collegiate sports is about. Competitive sports is about is putting the best guy on the field. And that's what K-State believes that they are doing. And I commend them for it. And I commend Will for understanding that and leaving and going and putting himself in a better position and a better situation. But it just kind of is what it is. I think not enough people, guys, are willing to say that and kind of want to dance around that fact.
Yeah.
Just being honest and just saying, hey, guys, the coaches think we're going to be better with Avery than we were with Will, period.
And yeah,
that's why we're in the situation that we're in.
And let's call it like it is. To me, a Heisman candidate quarterback, a quarterback that's good enough to win the Heisman Trophy, isn't getting into what kind of became a QB battle through freshman. Or if you're saying, yeah, actually he can, then you must think Avery Johnson is on another level, which I agree with. I think he's a stud. So either you're saying Avery is so insanely good that he could get in a quarterback battle as a true freshman with a third year guy who's been playing for all 3 years, who's a Heisman candidate, or you're saying, you know, on the flip side, well, either Avery's really good or Will's not that good. One of the two, because Avery just about took the starting job 8 weeks into his college football career. Less than that.
Well, yeah. I'm a believer of this. If Will Howard gets invited to New York, save a seat in the row right behind you for Avery, because like he was at K-State, he's going to be looking over your shoulder, because I think he could, on the fringes, he's listed in the Heisman odds, which says a lot. I think his odds are lower this for him than they were for Will last year, which I think is interesting. I think Avery will, staying healthy, at some point be in that discussion also. We'll see if it's this year. Guys, K-State, West Virginia, 6 p.m., ESPN2.
Gotta have it.
Yeah. Do you see? I just don't see a way they lose this. I mean, I guess I do see. I just can't imagine them letting it happen, because at that point, it is of their doing, I believe, if they lose this game.
Yeah, they can't let their foot off the gas. I mean, you can see, trust me, it's kind of a setup game for them to let their foot off the gas. Hey, we beat the ranked opponent. Now this team that's only won 9 games, we can let our foot off the gas, you know, and take it easy, and we should just be able to cruise to victory. Hopefully the guys understand that, look, again, let's just flat out say it. They're not good enough to just cruise to victory over anybody in this conference. They have to go out and put their best foot forward, because I can tell you, if they let off their foot off the gas, they'll be down 10 at halftime, and then we're scrambling to try to win a game that they shouldn't have to do.
I agree. Glenn, do I get to see you tonight?
I will not be there. I switched days off with Landon, so I'm actually off tonight.
Do I have to see Landon?
No.
Caroline
will be there.
She's the best. She's the best out of you three. It's not even close.
I can't argue with that.
She went to KU. So I better take that back on the K-State.
She did tell me. I don't think she's seen K-State win yet this year. So I don't know if she's bad luck or what. But
here we go.
Yeah. Oh boy, it's all her.
If they lose tonight, we might have to start calling it a curse.
Yes, exactly. The curse of Caroline. Let's hope it doesn't hold up tonight against the Mountaineers. I get to see my buddy Josh Eilert. That's it for this week's edition of the K-State Insiders. No Tim Everson. Great sadness filled the land.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.